Monday, June the 3rd. Have you voted yet?
Yes.
Okay, well, it was just kind of wild.
Okay, well, I just thought I'd fill some dead air.
I was kind of enjoying the silence.
Yeah. Let's see how you like it.
Yeah. It's the 152nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, voting CPA, Bill McCauley. Glad to see that. I almost got the colors right on the pants, huh?
Yeah, we're like twins.
Yeah, yeah. Mutt and Jeff.
Woof.
It's tough to know who's who. Oh, well, good. I'm glad you prepared for the program.
Exactly. I thought it would be really good if one of us did.
Good deal. Yeah. And what would that be? What would be the tease, the enticement, the sample, the hors d'oeuvre for people to come back
for?
Well,
I think that to be charitable, we can talk about contributions. How's that?
Oh, I got it. Yeah. You have been practicing.
Ba-boom, boom.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about charities and donating to them when we come back.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. Juan790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. You get Nancy. You want to run from the room already?
I've checked my options.
Watch out, Damon. He may be coming over the counter.
There was a time where I could have gotten over the counter without hurting myself, but
or others are crashing and knocking everything away. Yeah,
yeah, it might be behind me now.
Now we need a ladder. Our quote this afternoon comes from George Orwell. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past.
Mm.
That's not that deep, is it?
No. Well, okay. It is for me.
Revisionism. Oh, okay. So, when we talk about charitable donations, I can use what people come to us here for with our PSAs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a presumption that anybody who is a nonprofit qualifies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do all nonprofits qualify for charitable donations?
There are different rules for different types of organizations.
So not all nonprofits are the same.
Not all are the same.
When we think of nonprofit, we think of charitable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that in a formal designation or is that a working definition?
Well, charities are kind of a subset of the whole nonprofit realm.
Boy Scouts, Campfire Girls.
Sure.
That kind of stuff.
But you also need to understand that included are some private clubs come under the
nonprofit or charity?
Nonprofit. Come under the nonprofit.
Chambers of Commerce do.
Exactly.
You know, business associations do.
There's
a bunch of those types of things that are certainly not charitable by any stretch
exactly.
of the imagination.
So there's these all come under code section 501C of the
and that's what you hear all
code.
The time.
Yeah.
I'm a C3.
Well,
C5, C2.
Anyway, there's a continuum, and I can't remember what all of them specifically are at the moment. 501c3 is public charities. So somebody comes in, and they're a 501c3. They're a public charity, and generally they get the most favorable terms when it comes to making a contribution toward them.
So a public charity is one that's publicly recognized as a charity?
Yeah, well, I mean, basically the IRS, if... In order to be a public charity, you know, most organizations need to go through the Internal Revenue Service. They need to make an application for an exemption and fill out a very long and arduous form that will likely be sent back for revisions and corrections. And subject to getting that complete, then the IRS will grant, typically they'll grant charitable status, but it's kind of probationary. And you then have 2 to 3 years where you're undergoing this probationary period and establishing to the IRS.
Monitored.
Yes, that you're doing all the things you said you were going to do when you applied for exemption, and therefore, you'll initially get kind of a probationary determination letter. Then subsequently, you get a determination letter. The determination letter says, "We have determined your organization is exempt from income taxes under Section 501(c)(3) of the Internal Revenue Code." That says, "Okay,
you crossed that line. There,
You're now a full-fledged public charity. You're no longer you're out of the probationary window." And you're in a position where, you can operate relatively freely, subject to certain requirements that are imposed upon those entities. Now, churches also qualify under 501(c)(3), and there are some churches who've never applied for exemption, but they may still qualify for exemption. So
they are perceived as a public charity, or that's a subset of public charity?
They would be a subset, yeah.
Now, if there's a public charity, then that kind of intimates that there is a private charity. Foundations, things like that. Yeah, are those charities?
Yeah, and there's a whole, we could spend a bunch of time talking about operating private foundations and non-operating private foundations.
Humboldt Area Foundation as a reference.
Yes.
Would that typically be the type of thing that would
be? Humboldt Area Foundation is not a private foundation. In the sense that a private foundation, Bill Gates created a private foundation. That's probably the most known.
Gates family.
Gates Foundation was created by the family, and that foundation is, I don't know if it's an operating or a non-operating private foundation, but there's a set of rules there that the private foundation, in the private foundation world, you have to operate. And a lot of that, those rules require that those organizations distribute a high percentage of their income or a percentage of their assets in order to maintain their status.
So the Kennedy Foundation would be similar?
Sure. Yeah.
Just a little bit more proven?
Slightly larger than the Papstein Foundation.
Which is kind of the corner of one of the garages.
So, I mean, we don't see too many private foundations. They tend to be somebody who wants to. The advantage of the private foundation when you're doing estate planning is if you set up a private foundation, you can establish purposes for the funds, and you can have a little more control from the grave as to what's going to happen to those funds. And for
so
that,
kind of earmarking.
Yeah, and so you can see families do this. There's also some rules about how much compensation can be taken, because you can also see that somebody might want to say, "I want to create this private foundation. It's going to hire my kids to run it," and the kids get a job for life, and they make a overly generous salary. The IRS considers that all abusive, so they've got a bunch of anti-abuse rules in place for private foundations.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Nearly half a century in the news business should count for something. I'm Dave Silverbrand, and that's how long I've been watching the world go by. Now it's time to put it in perspective. Join me each weekday for a look at local news and views and what they mean to you from my perspective. Dave's Take Two on KWSW 3 times each day during the 8, noon, and 5 o'clock hours. Or read them on our website, kwsw980.com.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon about charitable donations with Bill McCauley. So, Bill, in the first segment, we established that there's the C3s are public charities, and that there's a subset of public charities that are charity, and there's some that are religious.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some who qualify because by nature, and there are some that qualify because they have to go through the IRS gauntlet and fill out the forms and get the blessing.
Right.
So for the charitable charities, I guess the ones we would all think of as being normal.
You mean
there's
and,
a vetting?
And there's a series of ones we can easily think of, like the Salvation Army or the Goodwill. You know, some right. of those that are just, I mean, it's, you know, it just strikes you in the face.
Okay, no question is, about
is,
it.
This is United Way. Okay, we understand what they do. And, you know, United Way's had their
Brian
issues.
Brian Hall was out here, yeah. with the rescue mission.
Right.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Even those obvious ones have to go through that
some of them,
process?
Most of them have gone through that, the vetting process.
Sometime in the
yeah,
past.
Exactly. And they've gone through they made an application for exemption and you know, worked their way through, and after, you know, 3 or 5 years they're okay as a public charity and off now, they go.
Now I would really be curious to see if somebody like the Salvation Army or somebody who predates the IRS if they were grandfathered in, or if they had to apply
the
as
IRS
this thing
has grown, has a list
developed.
Oh,
under,
really? Yeah, for organizations it's section it's
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And that has a listing?
Yeah, they do. They have a list of qualified charities, and it's and we used to have it in paper. Now you can get it online, and it's but it's, you know, it's like a
Reams.
It's huge. It's you know, on thin paper, and it's 3.5-4 inches thick, and little just the name, and I don't remember if there's an address even in it. I mean, it's just very, you know, just listing the qualified public charities. And
that's got to be kind of cool to be able to celebrate that you made the list, the IRS list.
I guess, yeah. I mean, you know, the one thing that some of our clients forget and some taxpayers forget, particularly the nonprofits, is when you get that letter from the IRS, that determination letter I alluded to earlier, that thing is that's gold. You need to
frame it, hang it in the lobby.
You need to have that thing imaged up, saved in a good, safe place, because if you want to get a grant, as an example, and maybe you go to Humboldt Area Foundation, you say, we're trying to get a grant for this and thus and so, they're probably going to say, hey, we want to copy your determination letter. And
so that's a routine ask?
Yeah, it can be a very routine ask. So it's one of those things, if you're operating a not-for-profit organization, you get that letter from the IRS, you keep a good file on that, because that's important stuff. You also have to go through, if you're a California charity, go through the California cycle too, which is a little easier, but you know, you can to get qualified.
So states have to do the same thing?
They can, or they can just accept. Some states, I think, just accept what the feds do, but California, of course, has its own bureaucracy. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. That might have come across as sarcastic.
Yeah, possibly so. Possibly so.
Anyway.
Well, it is election day, and you voted, so you have that.
It's the golden state. So, you know.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about churches. Any distinction between churches, synagogues, mosques?
No.
Temples?
Nope.
How about a forest if you're a druid or something?
You know, yeah, that could be an issue. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't really know, because, you know, we don't really end up dealing with that very often. But yeah, there are some quasi-religious organizations that want to be considered a religious organization. And you know, ultimately you run into the same bias that we all have. It's like, okay, well, I didn't think of that as religious. You know, you could see where from an enforcement perspective, you could have some issues, because maybe because of my own frame of reference, I just can't look at that and see, okay, yeah, that's a charitable organization.
So do churches have to qualify?
They do qualify.
The same way?
And some apply for exemption and some don't. So
I would think that there are certain ones that probably are automatics.
Well,
if it's just Catholic, Presbyterian,
yeah,
those are probably
automatics.
Those
are already done, and you might be part of a combined filing, and you know, you might go in on the determination letter for, you know, Presbyterian Churches of America. I don't know. I don't have the right language here, but you may be able to get your determination right through that.
So what if you are a
new
church?
The same thing would apply to, you know, a local chapter of the Red Cross or some other organization. You may go in under the
almost an umbrella.
The umbrella of the national organization.
So is there ever a church that gets nadied?
Probably, but I would think that'd be the exception, not the rule. But there could be. I'm sure there have been organizations that have been denied for various and sundry things. I mean, there's a lot of great stories out there of people's ideas of what they thought was charitable, and you know, they tried to run them past the IRS, and the IRS, when they figure out. I mean, anyway,
that would be the second half of the show. Now everything so far has been
503C3s, but you said there's some C5s also.
Yeah, there's, and off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly what C4, C5, C6, but there, you know, some of those are fraternal orders. Some of them are social clubs. There are your unions and whatnot have their own subsection. There's also certain health and benefit and welfare plans that have a subsection. So there's a series of 501C subsections that apply to different types of organizations depending on where you fit in the continuum.
And that's probably pretty well detailed out. You can find that information.
Absolutely.
KINS, news and information. Did I cut you off?
I was going to say just not off the top of my head.
Yeah, good. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. So, Bill, we were talking about charitable donations and charities. And I think that there, for most of us, I think there's probably three different donation resources, if you will. There's the cash. There's the time.
I'm shaking my head.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Good. Uh-huh. We all heard the rattle.
Doesn't work so good on radio.
Yeah, no, well, this time it did, strangely enough. And then you've got your time, you've got real money, and what was the other one going to be?
Non-cash.
Yeah, goodies, items.
Yeah. I read your mind. It's kind of frightening for me.
Well, that could explain the rumbling around, yeah. The rattle.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are indeed three different types of...
Three different ways to track, three different ways that the organization, the charity, has to track that information. I would think that there's very little in common other than... you or the donor is donating to whoever the receiver is, but how you go from point A to point C, there's all kinds of ways to get there.
So let's carve the services out first, if that's all right, because there's two sides to it, and we don't really have time to go into what the charity has, you know, what the requirements are for the charity on their end for donated services. But in general, donated services, you don't get a deduction for. So in other words, I'm a CPA. I could offer XYZ public charity my services to prepare a tax their annual tax return, and let's say that's valued just for a nice round number, it's $1,000, picking a number out of the sky. So I do this tax return for $1,000. Well, because of the rules, I don't get a charitable deduction for my labor. All right,
not because you're a CPA. But just the way the rules are.
Because the
for
rules
anybody.
Basically are that you're not going to get a deduction.
I could give them $1,000 of advertising, and it would be similar.
A little different, but similar, yes.
Okay.
But yes, I mean, basically it comes down to, and the IRS essentially says, the theory is this. You could deduct it if you wanted to, but you'd have to pick up the income on the other side. So the theory would be the charity... pays me $1,000 in effect, so I have $1,000 of income, and then I get $1,000 charitable contribution as a deduction. So theoretically, that nets to zero, but I can tell you from an income tax standpoint, it may not. So most people really don't want that particular exchange transaction. So the reality is that the donated services are not going to be a deduction item. Now, when we start looking, so we've kind of separated the services item, and then the next two pieces are cash and non-cash, and there's a lot of rules on both of them. Now, from the cash side, if I make a $10 contribution and I have a canceled check to prove it, I can deduct that $10 contribution as part of my itemized deductions. Assuming
because you have the canceled check?
Because I have a canceled check, but once it gets over $250, there's a new set of rules, okay?
Cumulative donating 250 or 252 specific?
The rules are that that it's $250 in any one day to an organization. I've always treated it with my clients. It's $250 in a series. Be conservative. If you've got a $250 contribution over the year that went into XYZ, you should have a receipt. And that's what the rules for contributions over $250 are, that the donor must have an acknowledgement. And the acknowledgement must be received either by the day you file the return or by the extended due date of the return for that year if you filed after. You know, up to the extended due date of the return. So if I wait until October 15th, if I get an extension and I wait until October 15th, I have until October 15th to get that receipt. If I don't have it, the IRS will disallow the deduction if they find out.
How formal does that have to be? I mean, with emails and stuff, could that qualify? You give the $1,000 to pick a charity, USA. Yeah. Could you just get an email from whoever your contact is saying, Bill, thanks very much for the check. We got it. Love and kisses.
Typically, there would need to be a statement in there to the effect that no tangible benefits were received as a result of the contribution. So you'll see when you look at most charitable contribution receipts, you're going to see, you know, the thank you for your contribution. We really appreciate it. You're really going to help us build the new building. Fill in the blank. Thank you for, and then they'll say your contribution was maybe in a dollar amount, and they'll say no tangible benefits were received.
Pretty standardized language.
Yeah, it is. But if it's not there, the IRS can disallow. So you want, you know, so it's important
so
that
for
the
being
charitable organizations
being sloppy, you don't really want to be sloppy.
Well, yes, and it's incumbent upon the charitable organizations to do it right, because can you imagine, you know, because most contributions. A lot of contributions don't come unsolicited. Let me put it that way. You know, most organizations are out working hard trying to raise money. Well, if you're working hard trying to raise money, you come to me and say, well, gee, I'd like you to make a $1,000 contribution, and I'm feeling particularly weak that day, and I agree to do it, or whatever the case might be, or I feel, hey, this is I love what you do. I'm happy to do this contribution. I make out a check. They give me a piece of paper. I put it in my file. I do my tax return. And then if I get audited and the IRS says that's not adequate, well, that's going to create some problems all the way down the stream. You know, I'm not going to be very happy with this charity that didn't give me substantiation that was adequate for tax purposes, because it's a relatively easy hurdle to cover.
So real simple rule of thumb, if it crosses $250 in a year, you're into the gray zone.
Probably a good idea to have a written acknowledgement back from the charitable organization.
And most of these folks know what...
95% or more, in my experience, know exactly what you need, and they prepare them by rote. They know that we have to get these things out. And
should you wait to the end of the year, or should it be a relatively normal business cycle turnaround?
Well, for some charitable organizations, they'd like to do it twice, and here's why: you send them a check for $500 to pick your charitable organization. And they send you a receipt that probably has all the requirements met for having a receipt for tax purposes. But they probably are going to send you another one in January that does the same thing. It looks a little different, because that's a good time to remind you and thank you and ask you maybe if you want to do it again. And anyway, so...
I guess I'd be more blatant. I'd just stuff another envelope in there.
Well, they do that too. Yeah, sure they do. Yeah, I mean, we see that. I mean, that's pretty common. So it's a good opportunity. So a lot of times people really have two chances to get a receipt for the contribution, because a lot of times they get one contemporaneous when the contribution is made, and then again at the end of the year.
KINS, News and Information Times 343. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students.
Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time. It's 3:46. Only a couple minutes left with Mr. McCauley this afternoon. Bill, non-cash contributions or donations to charities. That's got to be the sticky wicket of the bunch. If one says 100%, get your note. The other says nothing. Okay. Now here's, well, there's the ad that we hear in the Bay Area an awful lot. Cars for Kids.
Yeah.
Okay, so you donate your car, and is it Blue Book? Mm. Is it parts value? How do you determine what it's really worth?
Most of
now, let's take it down to your fur-lined sweater from high school,
yeah,
or your Letterman's jacket, well, yeah, or
right.
How do you get any kind of what value is?
It's an interesting area. Cars are an issue all to themselves. We could talk about cars.
Oh, they are unique.
Well, they have an extra set of rules, and so, and suffice it to say, a lot of my clients who have made car donations have been frustrated by them, and so because basically they end up getting limited to whatever the charity sells the car for after they get it, and they dump the car. So you know, you get the car, and they sell it for below what they thought, less than what they thought it was worth, and so their deduction gets limited to this realized value on the subsequent sale. But for non-cash contributions, it's important that you know the name of the organization, the date, and the location of the contribution. You have to have a reasonably good description of what the property was that was donated. And you have to have a fair market value for the property and what that method was. Now, for people who take stuff to the Rescue Mission thrift shop, we tend to characterize that as thrift shop value. And that's, you know.
Is 10% of retail? Is that?
People are all over the map on this one. There are some websites you can go to. I don't know that they're in any way authoritative. They're not authoritative, but they're maybe helpful. I think for clothing and things like that. If you put in 10 collared shirts and they don't have, you know, they're wearable or whatever. I don't know. What do you get? What's a collared shirt at a thrift store? $3, $5, I don't know what it is, but it's not a lot. And so
versus the antique-y.
Well, exactly.
That's going to be, yeah.
Or something, you know, this is a, you know, we've got this extra stuff because we, you know, dad died and we're you know, we got his
we're
old.
We're blending families.
Yeah.
It's probably a common
exactly.
One.
Or, you know, we're going to get rid of this furniture and the furniture clearly has value. You know, that's a whole other situation. Now, once your contribution goes over $500 in total for the year for non-cash contributions, you have to file a form with your tax return that report those non-cash contributions.
Same entity or cumulative?
Cumulative. Once it's over
for
500.
The taxpayer.
Once it's over 500. And if it goes over 5,000, you got to have an appraisal with some exceptions.
Not for an item, cumulatively.
It gets complicated, but yeah, in general, you start looking at the nature of what's been contributed, the amount of the contribution, of the value of each contribution.
So this is one to start doing a little research on.
It is. If you got a big one, you want to make sure you get ahead of it, because you can end up, you know, trying to do a lot in March, and that can be frustrating. So it's kind of nice if you know it's coming to deal with it.
Thanks for coming by.
Been a pleasure.
Yeah, vote.
Yes.
And then listen.
Yeah.
We've been Talking Shop with Bill McCauley. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.